Hey everyone, welcome to Superwomen. Today's guest is Amy Peterson, the founder of Rebel Nell. She started Rebel Nell in 2013 while living next to a homeless shelter in Detroit, and she decided she wanted to help these women who wanted to create a life for themselves. So she started Rebel Nell with a mission to provide employment, equitable opportunity, and wraparound support for these women while they work to craft beautiful jewelry. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So I would love to go back to you living next to a homeless shelter in Detroit in 2013. Tell me everything.
Yes, I was, at the time, I was pursuing my dream job. I never really envisioned myself as an entrepreneur. My dream was to be the first female general manager of a Major League Baseball team. And that's what ultimately led me to Detroit, kind of that dream of working in sports where you kind of go where the wind takes you. And I was, after so many rejection letters, I finally received that opportunity to start as an intern with the Detroit Tigers, and ultimately got an apartment and was living right next door to a well-known shelter in Detroit called COTS. And their focus is on women and families. And kind of a long story short, there were a lot of challenges being a woman in the sports world. I was with the Tigers for 11 years and ultimately was an attorney for them. But I would go home at night and walk my dog and chat with the women who were living next door to me. And here I was hearing their struggles of how they left challenging situations in search of a better opportunity, not only for themselves, but for their families, even if this meant going to live in a shelter. And it was at that time, kind of frustrated with the sports industry and what was happening there. I just was like, what if I started a company that was solely dedicated to empowering women? What would that look like? And as a result, Rebel Nell was born.
I'm so curious, where did you get the name Rebel Nell from?
Well, when we were coming up with the name for our company, we wanted it to be reflective of the work that we're doing. And my business partner and I, being that we're really about empowering women, we thought it'd be a nice tribute or homage to name the company in honor of a woman who was a trailblazer. And we went back and forth on the name for so long. I mean, it must have taken us 4 weeks of a million text messages. And then, of course, over drinks, where all great ideas come from, we both realized that we had a shared affinity for Eleanor Roosevelt. I, at the time, was reading a book about her, and what we learned, I mean, she's an incredible humanitarian, civil rights activist, women's rights advocate, and the nickname that her dad gave her was Little Nell, and we thought she was deserving of a more badass nickname, so that's how we came up with Rebel Nell. We also believe that the women we employ are rebelling against what life has dealt to them. Plus, the jewelry that we make is from fallen street art, which is a rebellious art form. That's how we got our name, Rebel Nell.
So you moved to Detroit. You had an internship with this baseball company. I'm not a sports enthusiast, so forgive me if my terms are wrong. How did you get in touch with them? And then how did you eventually get hired?
Yes. So I went to college, then law school, then business school. And honestly, it was pursuing a dream that I'd had since I was about 14 years old. I really wanted to work in baseball and I really wanted to be the first female GM. And so I received all of that early education because I wanted the well-rounded brain. I wanted to be able to compete on I always jokingly call it like the boys clubhouse side of things. On the player acquisition side, understanding that was really important for me. So I wanted the well-rounded brain. And then I was in business school at the time and I had a wonderful professor and he said, well, Amy, to get your break in sports, I may have someone for you to meet. This guy owned a bunch of minor league teams. And I went to hear him speak and I had this really great pantsuit on and I was dressed far more business than anybody else in the entire room. They were dressed casual. I brought my resumes just in case. And my professor introduced me to him after he spoke. And he said, okay, well, what is it that you want to do? And I said, well, my dream is to be the first female general manager of a Major League Baseball team. And he started laughing. And he said, honey, your best bet is to marry a player. Ugh, and I was like, oh my gosh. Terrible. It was terrible. And I just remember being stunned because here, and with the encouragement of my professor, I was like, just astonished that that was his response. And I remember like looking at him and saying, okay, I disagree. And I turn around, I walk straight back to my shoebox size apartment, and I cried for a solid 2 hours, I bet. And I was like, you know what? Screw that guy. So I just started sending off resumes. And for every rejection letter I got, I would send out another one. And I was asking to work for free anywhere, any team that would take me. I ended up getting 3 rejection letters from the Tigers until I ultimately got the opportunity to start as an intern. And I'm so grateful to this day to the person who gave me the opportunity to be an intern. And then I just worked my ass off. You know, every opportunity there was, whether it was in the department I was in or other departments after my job was finished, I was just constantly learning and ultimately like climbing the ladder at the Tigers and ultimately became associate counsel for them. And that's why I spent 11 years with the organization.
Wow. So I bet you wanted to have that pretty woman moment with that man who said that to you, right?
100%. It was, I think achieving that, I mean, it was amazing how many comments I would get in the position I was at the Tigers. Like people just assuming I slept my way at the top, even fans would say stuff to me. I'd walk around the park just like in a business suit and, you know, people would ask, what do you do here? Oh, I'm an attorney. Oh, I bet I know how you got your job. I mean, it was crazy.
Do you think though, the idea, I think I believe this, but I feel like I was a big, when I was younger, played on team sports, and the idea of teammanship and that cultivation of teammanship, I think sets people up to be much better leaders than, you know, cut to half my life being a ballerina and it's, you can only be one and there can only be a prima. It's a much different mentality than team sports. I don't know if that affected your ability to lead your team at all today.
You know, I did both. I grew up as an ice skater. So I had that experience of, and you're right, like being a single performer, you know, like you only had myself to answer to is in one way. And that also puts so much pressure on yourself. But I also played a lot of team sports. And I think you're right. And it really reflected on it. But teaches you how to navigate everybody so that we're all kind of going in the same direction and valuing that. I don't know which one I prefer. I think I still prefer the solo sport. Managing people is so hard.
Oh, it is. It is not for the faint of heart. Sometimes I used to feel like sometimes managing people was harder than the actual anything else in the business.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. What was the time between your idea? Like, did you know you wanted it to be jewelry or, you know, I have so many questions when it comes to like, okay, let's do this. Like, did the women have these skill sets or did you have to teach them?
Yeah, we're really unique in the sense that we started mission first. I think so many companies start with a product first and then fit the mission in as a secondary thought. We started with, okay, well, we're going to create a company that teaches women how to fish. What does that look like? I wanted it to provide not only employment, but also how could we support the wraparound services? So the financial literacy, business education, life wellness, legal resource, how could we fit that all under one roof? And then the product came second. I was like, well, okay, well, we need to sell something in order to support this. What can we make that would provide, you know, the sales, the revenue to support this idea? And I was running one day on a well-known bike path in Detroit, and it's filled with murals that have been there for, oh gosh, really, really, really long time. And a chunk had fallen on the ground, and I thought, wow, that's really cool. Look at this piece of, you know, fallen street art, but you could see all the layers that it was that made up that piece. And I was like, wow, it's so cool on its surface, but how do I expose these layers? And I thought it was really symbolic of the work that we were doing to really highlight the layers of the women we were going to employ. And also Detroit at that point in time, you have to like think back a bit. That was in the midst of Detroit being in bankruptcy, one of the largest municipal bankruptcies the country's ever seen. And I was like, you know, there's so many amazing people and ideas here in this city that we, you know, have been discarded by the media and everybody else. So it was just a quick thought. And I was like, okay, I'm going to turn this into wearable art. How am I going to do this? I really had no freaking clue. But I took the piece back and started playing around. I called my business partner and I was like, come on over. I think I've got an idea. See if we can take this fallen street art and turn it into jewelry. And we did.
So at first, what was your first conversation with, you know, did you go to all the women at the shelter? Did you pick a couple? How did you begin to connect the dots between, you know, now you have this, you have the women who are behind and you now have the jewelry idea?
It's a great question. We first met even before we really even launched the business. I met with some of the heads of the shelter. I went in and chatted with the women to really understand if this was, you know, to make sure that we were providing a solution that was needed. And they were the ones, in fact, Delphia, she works in the shelter and has been a mentor for me for years. She was the one who was like, yes, you need to do this. This is what we're missing is that landing place that, you know, now it's called a social enterprise. And we started, there wasn't a name for it. At least we didn't know about it. That provides this supportive work environment to help the women as they're transitioned to a life of independence. And so with her inspiration and encouragement, we did it. Doesn't mean we knew what we were doing, but she gave us the encouragement to start. And then we work really closely with the shelters. We still do to this day as our referral partners. And that's, I think, so much the secret to our sauce is really amplifying the work that the incredible caseworkers do inside the shelters. We look to them to kind of refer women who are ready for this opportunity so that we can just take all the incredible work that they're doing at the shelters and then help guide them on the next step. So they are our partners in this journey as well.
So what were some of the beginning days like as you're, you know, here you are, you left a world which had its own challenges, like you had said, in the sports world and being a woman. And now you're entering a world where you're creating things and you're giving people opportunity, but you're also probably dealing with women who have a lot of stress, mental trauma. And now, you know, that's coming into your ecosystem. So how did you sort of navigate starting a business with those challenges?
You know, it was, I mean, everything's a challenge. And I think that, you know, we've done a good job of altering the words, my business partner and I, from like challenges to learning opportunities. We say that all the time. But it was tough. In fact, I was still working at the Tigers. I worked there for 5 years after starting Rebel Nell. And just really, it was a passion project as we were learning so much and failing constantly. And in 2016, the truth of the matter is we almost shut down so many times, in part because we realized we were spending so much time and energy on the resources of supporting the women. You know, from, if I look back on that year, so much happened. You know, there was, you know, women were sometimes had to stay at the shop or stay at our house because they were at risk of going back into the shelter. There was no boundaries. It was just, we were doing everything. And my business partner and I aren't trained social workers. There was, you know, one of our kids was involved in a stabbing. There's just constant chaos in 2016. And not that that still doesn't exist, but I think we've been able to provide a supportive structure to help us manage it a little bit better. But it was, we spent zero time on the business in 2016. None, zip, nada, everything was focused on the resources. And we had a moment where we really almost shut our doors And the team came together, and I'll never forget, like, some of our ladies saying, hey, don't give up. We need this. Like, we need this opportunity. The world needs more Rebel Nels to help. And so it was at that point in time, we just kind of developed a structure. And frankly, we actually launched a nonprofit arm in that point in time to help hold all the wraparound support to create that buffer so that we could focus on the business. Because if we didn't have a business, we weren't helping anybody. Right. So it was a big shift for us in 2016. But I can't tell you, I mean, every entrepreneur goes through phases where they're like, I'm going to shut it down like constantly, right? It's a roller coaster. But 2016 was that year where it was just, it was a really, really tough year, really tough year.
What were some of your guiding principles in that tough year about how you remained able to sort of see the North Star and continue? Because I think a lot of people hit these roadblocks and they go, I don't know if this is worth it, or I don't know if I can continue if this is how it's going to be. And then they get through it. But there's definitely some tough moments there.
I was just reflecting on that today with somebody, because I feel that right now, so many of my entrepreneur friends are really burned out. And, you know, it's been a lot. And especially, you know, Detroit is known for being such a tough and resilient city. And now is that time that it's testing everybody, where it's like, okay, well, you just put one foot in front of the other. And I think part of it is just being able to trust the process. You know, in those moments, it's easy to reflect on and just know that it was a hard year. But in the moment, making sure, you know, trusting the decisions that you're making and really listening to the universe. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I believe in that. I believe that, you know, at that point in time, my team really rallied around and was like, no, we're not giving up. We're not shutting down. And then, you know, you just kind of put that energy into the universe and then you start answering the calls, right? The universe responds. And, you know, people were coming out of the woodwork. We ended up getting funding that year. And I can't tell you why. I mean, there wasn't a real shining reason other than people believe in what we're doing, you know, thinking back on 2016. And so I think it's just a matter of, you know, trusting the process and taking each day for what it is. It is just that day.
Sometimes I like to say, and I say this in my book, like sometimes success is determined by the fact that you just got back up the next day, that you didn't give up, you know, that you still showed up.
Rebecca, you're 100% accurate. And yeah. I think of how many times, you know, just waking up the next, like you'll have a day where you're just so defeated and you're like, I can't do it anymore. And then maybe I'll have a glass of wine, go to bed or a bottle and go to bed and wake up the next day. And you're like, okay, I'm going to do it today. And maybe you need 2 days off, but then at some point in time, it clicks back in. And that's what I rely on. You know, spent a lot of time being anxious, waiting for that click in sometimes, you know, it didn't come within 5 minutes, but it always seems to come back. And it's just a matter of getting up and facing the day, because every day is a gift, and it's up to us to see how we approach it.
Have a couple of stories that stand out of some of the women who have been part of Rebel Nel and how it's changed their lives?
Yes, I do. And I think that's the adrenaline. That's what has me hooked when you think about the tough times. I think a lot about, you know, we've hired 34 women out of the shelter. And I go back to, you know, the first three employees we had. We shouldn't have hired three. That was financially really stupid because we didn't have any money, but we fell in love with three and we're like, okay, we're just going to go for it. You know, at that point in time, my salary was funding the business. We didn't have enough sales, but we learned so much with them. And one story in particular, you know, we were doing a pop-up event in the middle of winter in Detroit. And this will forever stand out for me. And I believe wholeheartedly in learning to sell the product while you're at Rebel Nel. There's a bunch of different tiers and programs that exist, but customer service and learning how to deal with customers is very important. It's a skill set that we teach at Rebel Now, where if you can pitch your product, I believe that you can pitch yourself. Plus, part of what makes us so special is each piece is unique, not only because of, you know, the nature of the repurposed material that we use, but because of the woman who made it. So we were working a pop-up event, and we got the cheapest booth possible because that's all we could afford. We were basically in the coat closet right by the exit, and it was sliding doors and Sub-Zero. I remember we were wearing like puffy jackets and freezing. And I had the woman's name was Patricia, and she was working with me, and she had her two kids with her. And I was teaching her how to sell. And a woman came in and was like, "Wow, this is so cool. I love this necklace. I would love to own it." And then she asked how much it was. And we said, "Well, it's, $200. It was one of our most expensive pieces. And she said, "Okay, well, I'm going to think about it and I'll be back." Well, as you know, from working in retail, that's often not the case, right? People just say that to be nice and then they walk away and you never see them again.
Yep.
And so I told Trish, I was like, "Hey, don't be discouraged. She thought it was beautiful, but she's, I didn't want her heart to be broken. She likely may not come back. It's what people say." And she said, "Okay, Then sure enough, an hour later, this woman comes back. And at this point in time, she'd removed her coat and was like sweating. And she's like, "Okay, I can't stop thinking about this necklace." Well, it was at this point in time, we got a few minutes to tell her the story of Rebel Now and who we are, what we do. And oh, by the way, it's made by, fallen street art. She's like, "Oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing. Yes." And she ended up buying it. And it was very sweet. She asked Patricia to sign the back of the card because all of our pieces come with kind of the story of Rebel Now and the history of the piece and who made it. And so Patricia autographed the product card and she took a picture with Trish, and then the woman left. And I just remember, I turned back around to the table after saying goodbye to the woman, and Patricia collapsed on the ground and she was crying. And she was like, "I made that, Amy. I made that." And I always get emotional talking about it because it was such a profound moment for me. And then her kids, were huddled around her and she's like, "Mom, it's okay. It's okay." And Trish looked up at me and was like, "I need to go back to the shop. I need to make more pieces." And I was like, "It's Sunday. You don't need to go back to the shop. You're going to have plenty of time." But that was such an amazing moment because I realized then, and I didn't give it, we were still so new. I didn't give the jewelry making enough credit as part of the journey for the women. I kind of looked at that as like ancillary. But realizing how important it is because they are the creators. They are the visionaries. It's a calming experience for them. But how much it means when somebody believes in something that they created, right? You're a creator. You know how that feels. And to be able to gift that to them, then somebody buys it saying, "I believe in you," was really powerful. And that moment it's honestly what keeps me going.
I think that's incredible. Not only from the perspective that, just being a creator, that moment feels good, but to know that that's affecting a woman whose livelihood is literally make or break on some of these things is also an incredible added layer of beauty to that story. So thank you for sharing that. What do you think your plans are for Rebel Now? You mentioned you got funding. Did you actively seek out funding?
We did actively seek out funding and have a couple investors now. And so we secured the investing, I should say, 2 years ago, right before the pandemic hit. So I'm very grateful for it because it'll, in many ways, allowed us to survive. But we also need to put that money to work. And our goal is to scale. I really want to be a nationally recognized brand that moves needles, right? That really provides equitable opportunities for the women that we serve at Rebel Now. And so right now we're focused on, and I'm hoping the world is ready because that's what's holding us back, is that we can really put our scaling plan in motion. Not only growing our online and e-commerce presence, but we're looking to do some strategically placed retail stores. And if someone were to ask me a few years ago if I would ever do retail, I would say absolutely not. But now it's interesting how as a result of the pandemic and trying a few retail opportunities this year, how that worked in our favor. And just acquiring talent. I think it's fair to say that my business partner and I are at the point where we are almost capped at what we know we can give. Like, we need somebody with incredible experience to come in and help guide us on where we need to go and what we need to do to really be successful. So that's what my big plans are for this year.
So do you work with the same original shelter only, or have you expanded your network?
So we actually have 9 hiring shelter partners currently. We are constantly expanding our partner network, and we hope to continue to do that as we continue to grow and evolve. And I think who we're serving is always primarily focused on women and really on the workforce development side. But initially, we'd started just with women who had been faced with homelessness. Now we are working with, in addition to that, women who've been previously incarcerated, refugees, LGBTQ+. And that's not exhaustive. That's just how we've continued to grow. And it's been a true pleasure to be able to serve the people that we do.
So I like to ask my guests 2 questions at the end of every podcast. Is there something we'd be surprised to know about you?
I've got one that I just did. I just took my first surfing lesson, and I now have 4 stitches in the side of my head.
Oh no!
But I loved it. I truly loved it. I think 41 years old. I took my first surfing lesson, and even though I ended up in a hospital in a third world country, I truly loved it and can't wait to get back out there. But I think that that's one that not many people would guess about me.
Definitely not. And then what is one piece of advice you'd love to pass on, either that you learned the hard way or someone gave to you and you were actually like, wow, that's helpful. That actually worked.
There's so many things that I've learned along the way. So many fails. The one I would say, because I see this time and time again, and we certainly did this the wrong way, but get an accountant early. If you're an entrepreneur wanting to start a business, I think it's the mistake that we all make, unless you are obviously an accountant or by trade. We tend to cut costs a lot, especially as we're in startup. And we start out doing our own QuickBooks, and next thing you know, just to being penny wise and pound foolish, because that accountant's going to come back in and you're going to have to pay anyway to have them fix all the errors that you made. So that's my big piece of advice, is I would get an accountant early on in the process, earlier than you think you need it. It'll save you in the long run.
I couldn't agree more. I feel like if money is just the slightest bit not your forte, or you didn't go to business school, the quicker you can get that financial head, the better off you'll be, because so many businesses make mistakes so early on and continue to make them due to poor financial problems. So I love that you said that. So where can people support you, buy jewelry from these incredible women, all the things?
Yes, please visit rebelnell.com. Follow us on Instagram at rebelnell or on Facebook at rebelnell Detroit. And yeah, you can see they're on at rebelnell.com. You can also see stores that carry us, and there may be one in your neighborhood.
Thank you so much, Amy.
Thank you, Rebecca. This was truly, truly an honor. You are such an inspiration and a badass. Thank you for doing what you do.
I just wanted to thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I also want to ask you to rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a pain in the butt, but it actually helps with search and algorithms. So if you love this podcast, it is an easy way to get it more visible and out there. I also want you to follow me on Instagram at Rebecca Minkoff, at RM Superwomen, and be sure to check out my book, Fearless, The New Rules for Unlocking Creativity, Courage, and Success. Thank you again, and you will hear from me next week.